Israeli tanks advanced to the heart of Rafah despite international condemnation.
The horror and suffering must stop immediately.
Ireland, Norway, and Spain recognize a Palestinian state.
If countries do not now take this formal step to recognize Palestine, I fear there may not be the opportunity in the future. Now is the time to act.
And using coffee grounds in concrete, making it stronger and more earth-friendly.
They claim biochar can replace up to 15% of the sand used in concrete and make it 30% stronger. They're also in talks with Starbucks to take its coffee grounds.
Today is Wednesday, May 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Displaced Palestinians in Rafah made their way through mangled tents and scattered belongings on Tuesday after an early morning Israeli airstrike killed Palestinians sheltering there, according to Gaza health officials. Gaza resident Manal Tambora saying, "We want to go, but we don't know where to go. They told us this was a safe space." Israel's military denied striking a tent camp west of Rafah on Tuesday after Gaza health authorities said Israeli tank shelling had killed more than 20 people there. The latest bombardment comes days after an Israeli attack that set off a fire at a Rafah tent camp. That incident sparked global condemnation.
This is a devastating incident.
Israeli Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari says the military was investigating the possibility that Hamas munitions stored near a compound targeted in Sunday's airstrike might have ignited the blaze. He says that the missiles Israel used couldn't have started the fire that killed the civilians.
We're talking about munition with 17 kilos of explosive material. This is the smallest munition that our jets can use.
The Biden administration said it was closely monitoring the probe. Irish Prime Minister Simon Harris said the fighting in Gaza has to stop.
April's tragic mistake was the bombing of aid workers providing food to starving Gazans. May's tragic mistake was the bombing of displaced children, parents, and families who had fled to a designated safe zone in truly apoplectic scenes. What will June's tragic mistake be? And more importantly, what are we all in this world going to do to stop it?
On Tuesday, Ireland, Norway, and Spain officially recognized a Palestinian state.
If countries do not now take this formal step to recognize Palestine, I fear there may not be the opportunity in the future. Now is the time to act. The 1967 borders have slowly been eaten away, and this cannot continue. In the West Bank, in Gaza, in refugee camps, in Ireland, those who join us in the Dáil today, around the world, we here in Ireland, we see you. We recognize you. We respect you. And today, Ireland formally recognizes the state of Palestine.
Scotland First Minister John Sweeney said on Tuesday that the UK must join Ireland, Norway, and Spain in recognizing Palestinian statehood.
We face a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. It has been unfolding for months and it has reached an unimaginable level of horror. And what's important is that we take steps to bring about an immediate ceasefire. This catastrophe has got to be brought to an end. We have to stop selling arms to Israel. And we've got to take steps to stabilise the situation. That comes about by the United Kingdom joining other European countries like Ireland and Spain in recognising Palestine as an independent state. And SNP MPs elected to the House of Commons will argue powerfully for that to take place.
About 144 of the 193 member states of the United Nations recognize Palestinian statehood. We're following these other stories from around the world. Pope Francis apologized Tuesday after he was quoted using a vulgar and derogatory term about gay men to reaffirm the Catholic Church's ban on gay priests. The ruckus that ensued underscored how the church's official teachings about homosexuality often bumps up against the unacknowledged reality that there are plenty of gay men in the priesthood and plenty of LGBTQ+ Catholics who want to be fully part of the life and sacraments of the church. Hong Kong National Security Police arrested six people across the city on Tuesday under that new security law for alleged seditious intent, including a pro-democracy barrister already behind bars. The six were suspected of using a Facebook page to, quote, advocate hatred against the governments in Hong Kong and China. The Papua New Guinea government ordered thousands of residents to evacuate from the path of the still-active landslide on Tuesday after parts of a mountain collapsed, burying at least 2,000 people. Lawyers in former U.S. President Donald Trump's hush money trial gave closing arguments on Tuesday, with a New York prosecutor describing an attempt to hoodwink the American voter during the 2016 election, and the defense seeking to cast doubt on star witness Michael Cohen. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaleh has more.
Trump is charged with falsifying business records to cover up a $130,000 payment to porn star Stormy Daniels in 2016 to keep quiet about a sexual encounter she says they had 10 years earlier. In his closing argument, defense lawyer Todd Blanche told jurors Daniels had been trying to extort Trump by threatening to go public with a story of an alleged 2006 sexual encounter in the final weeks of the 2016 election. Trump denies wrongdoing and says he never had sex with Daniels. Blanche sought to discredit the testimony of both Daniels and former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, who testified he handled the payment to Daniels and that Trump approved the cover-up. New York prosecutor Joshua Steinglass urged jurors to set aside their personal views of Trump and instead determine whether prosecutors had proven their case, telling jurors, "This scheme, cooked up by these men at this time, could very well be what got President Trump elected." Jurors could begin deliberations as soon as Wednesday. If Trump is convicted, it would likely be several weeks or months until he is sentenced. A conviction will not prevent Trump from trying to take back the White House, nor will it prevent him from taking office if he wins. If found guilty, he faces up to 4 years in prison, although imprisonment is unlikely. Trump faces three other criminal prosecutions as well, but none is likely to go to trial before the election.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaleh. In our continuing coverage of the U.S. presidential election, candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump both say America needs a strong military. Biden says the U.S. military is strong today. Trump says Biden has weakened the U.S. military, that Trump says he rebuilt his president. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
President Joe Biden told graduates of the U.S. Military Academy on Saturday that America has never asked its military to do so many different things in so many different places all at once.
Right now, American soldiers are supporting brave Ukrainians in their fight for freedom. Our soldiers are working around the clock to keep munitions and equipment moving by land, sea, and air.
Those commitments include the Middle East.
The U.S. Air Force has conducted food drops, delivering tens of thousands of meals to the people of Gaza. In the face of Iran's recent unprecedented attack on Israel, we brought partners together, including Arab nations, to repel the sustained assault.
Donald Trump says Biden is leading America's military into a, quote, insanely dangerous situation.
Our country has been totally humiliated, and we have a corrupt, compromised president, crooked Joe Biden, who is dragging us into World War III, and that's what's happening.
Trump says Biden should not be risking war with Russia or China. In a campaign video, he promised to put the U.S. military behind a foreign policy that puts America's interests first.
I will ask Europe to reimburse us for the cost of rebuilding the stockpiles sent to Ukraine, which they should be doing now, but Joe Biden is too weak and too disrespected to even ask.
Biden says America's military is strengthening alliances and investing in deterrence.
Defending our values by standing up to tyrants and safeguarding the peace by protecting freedom and openness. Thanks to the U.S. Armed Forces, we're doing what only America can do. As the indispensable nation, the world's only superpower, and the leading democracy in the world.
The U.S. Defense Department says Army, Navy, and Air Force recruitment in fiscal year 2023 missed targets by more than 40,000 recruits. Trump says that's because many people do not want to serve in the U.S. military because of what he called Biden's, quote, woke policies and political purges.
I will restore the proud culture and honor traditions of America's armed forces, and there will be no Marxism allowed, no communism allowed, and we'll get rid of the fascists.
The U.S. military says there are several reasons for dropping recruitment, including a stronger economy, which gives younger people more options, and a greater mistrust of institutions among those in Generation Z, born between 1997 and 2012. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Georgians expressed anger and disappointment on Tuesday after Georgia's parliament voted to override a presidential veto of a bill on foreign agents that has plunged the South Caucasus country into crisis.
I am impressed by the government's decision to take, to change the foreign policy trajectory of Georgia and to take Georgia to the direction of Russia. We always had questions about their intentions, but now it's so clear. So all masks are off. We know where they take our country. It's not about the law anymore. It's about their decision to distance Georgia from the West, from the EU, from the NATO, and take Georgia to the direction of Russia and make Georgia the ally of Russia. So this is what is happening now. And we are ready to fight. We are very motivated, and we will never let anyone in this country to take our country to the direction of Russia. It will never happen in Georgia. You see so many people here. We will be here until the end. We will fight, and we will win.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious what's happening, and it's just disastrous, disastrous day in our lives and in Georgian history. Basically, I struggle to remember anything like this. I mean, such obvious treason. I mean, I'm overwhelmed. I can't speak. I'm sorry about that. But I think that they, with this, they just validated their status as puppets and the most treacherous people in our history, probably. And we will make respective judgment and respective conclusions. And I think this is the beginning of the end, of their end.
It's unbelievable what's happening, really. It's just unbelievable that they could turn around Georgia's course and what we've been fighting for and working for 35 years just like this. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's really heavy, and I think that everyone here, like, you can feel the energy. Like, everyone is just, I mean, I can't say that I was expecting anything else, but there was a little bit of hope that maybe that they would come to their senses and not overturn the veto. But it's really, really hard.
The dispute about the draft law has come to be seen as a key test of whether or not Georgia, for three decades among the most pro-Western of the Soviet Union's successor states, would maintain its Western orientation or pivot back to Russia. The bill would require organizations receiving more than 20% of their funding from overseas to register as agents of foreign influence, while also introducing punitive fines for violations as well as onerous disclosure requirements. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. The African National Congress has been governing South Africa since 1994, when Nelson Mandela was elected president following the end of apartheid. But as voters get ready to go to the polls on Wednesday, the party, known for its opposition to apartheid, now faces corruption allegations, scandals, and divisions. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief, Mariama Diallo, has this story for us.
On the streets of Johannesburg, posters of candidates are displayed all over the city. One voter tells VOA he wants continuation and will cast his ballot for the African National Congress. Another one says he's had enough and will vote for the Democratic Alliance.
30 years of democracy is probably 30 years of policy. We need another 30 years of implementing those policies and seeing them coming through to fruition.
Because they're all about change. Enough is enough. We've had enough of the empty promises.
Housing, water.
In a promo video, ANC leader Cyril Ramaphosa says they've made progress in meeting the basic needs of the people of South Africa.
We are putting South Africa to work by investing in our people to ensure that no one is left behind.
Darrell Glazer, associate professor at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, says it's going to be the closest election since the era of inclusive democracy began in South Africa in 1994.
All the opinion polls are suggesting that there's a very serious chance that the ANC is going to fall below 50% of the vote and that it's going to be forced into some kind of coalition.
Glazer and other analysts have told VOA that allegations of corruption, scandals, and disunity within the ANC have helped the opposition gain ground, including the Economic Freedom Fighters Party led by Julius Malema, a former ANC youth leader, and the newly formed Umkhonto Wesizwe Party, which former President Jacob Zuma has been campaigning for.
Well, Jacob Zuma's party, Umkhonto Wesizwe, or MK, has been a completely unexpected surprise. I mean, it arrived on the scene quite late in the run-up to the election and completely scrambled everything. The EFF certainly appeals to a certain audience, and it's been growing. In some ways, MK is as much a threat to the EFF as it is to the ANC, if not more so, because it's capturing some of the discontented.
9 days before the election, South Africa's top court ruled that Zuma was not eligible to run for parliament because of a past criminal conviction. The ruling came 2 days after Zuma told thousands of supporters at the rally in Soweto that his MK party would help ease joblessness, among other issues, if it won. South Africa's unemployment rate has reached 32%, according to the World Bank, making it issue number one for many of the voters.
I think our biggest challenge as a country is our rate of unemployment, which is one of the biggest in the world.
I'll be voting for Action SA, and I think that party has got what we want in the country. Like now, we got a problem with the crime, and there's no work.
For me, it'll be poverty and unemployment. The lack of maintenance of infrastructure is another pressing issue.
Nearly half of the country's 62 million people have registered to vote, says Thabo Masemola, an independent electoral commission official, and he says they are prepared to manage the vote efficiently, as they've done historically.
The certified voters' roll is currently sitting as 27.7 million. And we use the voters' roll as the basis to prepare and plan for elections. So all the relevant election material are in place.
He says the IEC has accredited 160 organizations, both domestic and international, to observe the election and ensure its transparency. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
And finally, I don't know if you're like me, but I have got to have coffee in the morning. What do you do with the coffee grounds once you're done with them? Well, Australian researchers are turning used coffee grounds into a material that can be added to cement to make concrete stronger and more sustainable, potentially lowering greenhouse gas emissions. Here's Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber with more.
Your morning cup of coffee could help the planet. That's the promise of one Australian university that's transforming used coffee grounds into more sustainable concrete. The researchers at RMIT University are heating the coffee grounds to over 650 degrees Fahrenheit in an oxygen-free chamber to create a substance called biochar. They claim biochar can replace up to 15% of the sand used in concrete and make it 30% stronger.
We can leverage that to even reduce the cement content, which is a highly carbon-intensive material.
Rajiv Roychand is the lead researcher.
We anticipate that the whole 100% of coffee waste in Australia can be recycled into concrete applications.
Concrete production is responsible for around 7% of the world's CO2 emissions, according to the United Nations. Over 55 billion tons of sand and gravel are dug up each year, mostly for use in concrete. Its extraction is often environmentally destructive, and the UN says it's in increasingly short supply. The researchers here are working with several construction and concrete companies and forming their own biochar company. They're also in talks with Starbucks to take its coffee grounds. Local coffee shop owner Tony Roussos says he would get in on the action too.
Fantastic. It's a very innovative idea. Bring the cost of concrete down. And the materials, obviously, there's a benefit to the environment for not using harsh chemicals and replacing it with, you know, coffee grounds as a natural product. Easy to access. A lot of cafes could sell their coffee grounds, so end-to-end, it's a great solution.
Roychand says that eventually the technology could be used for more than just coffee.
In terms of real world, our focus is that we try to transform all of the organic waste that is ending up in landfills for this positive application in concrete. So we anticipate that about 60 to 70% we can divert from landfills into concrete applications.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In response to unfair trade practices by the People's Republic of China, including state-supported overcapacity of goods that flood markets and wipe out competition, the United States has announced additional tariffs on a variety of products and industries targeted by the PRC for dominance. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan underscored why such measures are needed.
China's distortive practices, non-market economic practices, subsidizing at dramatic scale industries where they are going to produce so much quantity of good and then flood the global markets with it, threatens to create global imbalances that are not stabilizing.
The additional U.S. tariffs will be imposed on China's critical manufacturing and mining sectors, including steel and aluminum, semiconductors, electric vehicles, batteries, solar cells, and certain critical minerals, said U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai.
The increased tariffs are expected to cover approximately $18 billion of trade. This strong action by the president is strategic. As he has said, we do not seek to constrain China's economic development, but we will insist on fair competition and defend American workers from the PRC's unfair practices.
Ambassador Tai said the move by the United States should come as no surprise to the PRC. U.S. officials over the past 3 years have been clear about the challenges that we are facing and the need for us to act.
This is not about escalation. The types of support that we're talking about here are defensive in nature. They're about creating the space to compete, the space to thrive, the space to survive, the kind of onslaught that we are seeing across the board.
During recent remarks in Frankfurt, Germany, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen emphasized the global nature of the challenge posed by the PRC and the need for coordinated action. Industrial overcapacity not only poses a threat to firms in the U.S. and Europe, she said, it could also prevent countries around the world, including emerging markets, from building the industries that could power their growth. If we do not respond strategically and in a united way, the viability of businesses in both our countries and around the world could be at risk.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.